So as you can see, I'm at home this morning in this super neat office that I've just superimposed on the background behind me, and we're going to be starting a new series of messages together today, a new series of studies. A couple of years ago, we were down at the market in Cardiff Bay. Now, if you don't love a market, I get worried about you. I love the atmosphere of a market. I love the feel of it. And down this particular market, there was one stall I was very drawn to that was being run by a puppet maker. How can you not love markets when they have people like this there? And I was looking around these puppets that had been made by this person, and I spotted one that instantly reminded me of the kind of the classic image that we often paint of Jesus. And so I went over and I had a look at it, and I picked it up, and I turned it over, and on the back there was a little name that had been sewn into the fabric of the puppet's clothes, and the word was storyteller. So I went over to the person, the puppet maker, and asked, "So, can I ask about this puppet?" And she explained that sometimes people ask her to make specific puppets, bespoke puppets. So if that's something you're after, get yourself down to Cardiff Bay next time there's a market there. And she said that a minister had been in touch and asked her to make a Jesus puppet for assemblies and things that he was doing. And so she'd made a few just to try and get used to it. And she was fairly convinced that not many people would buy it if it was just a Jesus puppet. She couldn't think of an audience for it. And so she thought, well, what could I call him instead? And the first thing that she thought of was storyteller. It's one of the things that Jesus is known for, isn't it? If you watch the introduction to this series that I posted on YouTube this week, apologies, it was meant to be a brief introduction and somehow it ended up being 11 minutes long. I'm very sorry about that. But you'll know that if you look up the word parable in the dictionary, in like 9 out of 10 dictionaries, they list Jesus as the primary user of parables, of this way of telling stories to make a bigger point of drawing you into truth through the power of stories. And so we're going to begin a series together this morning exploring the power of Jesus's stories. In Matthew 13, the chapter that we're just about to hear read for us in just a moment, Matthew tells us at the end of that chapter that this wasn't a one-off, this wasn't an isolated incident. He says Jesus always used stories and illustrations like these when speaking to the crowds. In fact, he never spoke to them without using such parables. This is such a big part of the ministry of Jesus, of the way of Jesus. And then right after that, he says, this fulfilled what God had spoken through the prophet. And then he quotes from Psalm 78, I will speak to you in parables. I will explain things hidden since the creation of the world. If you've got a slightly older translation with you today, that you might have a more expanded version of that verse there. When it says, I will speak to you, literally the words are, I will open my mouth and parables will come. There's a slowing down here. There's a dramatic emphasis. This is going to be a key part of the work of the Messiah. I will open, and that word open can also be translated in the Greek to a breaking open of something that once it's open, it can't be closed again. And again, when he says explain, it's a fascinating Greek word. It's more often used about a dam that bursts, about water that is pushed out and pressing forward, never to be put back again. And Jesus says, in his ministry, I'm bringing something that's been hidden. I'm releasing a truth, a power, a life. And so that's why we're going to be diving into the stories of Jesus. He never taught without them, because they reveal something, they push something out, they press something forward. So we're going to begin where Matthew begins. There are other sort of little parables that he shares in the Sermon on the Mount, but the first time we really get into the parables of Jesus is in Matthew chapter 13, and we're going to hear that read for us now. this in the Sermon on the Mount, but the first time we read
later that same day, Jesus left the house and went down to the shore, where an immense crowd soon gathered. He got into a boat where he sat and taught as the people listened on the shore. He told many stories, such as this one. A farmer went out to plant some seed. As he scattered it across his field, some seed fell on a footpath, and birds came and ate them up. Other seeds fell on shallow soil with underlying rock. The plants sprang up quickly, but they soon wilted beneath the hot sun and died because the roots had no nourishment in the shallow soil. Other seeds fell among thorns that shot up and choked out the tender blades. But some seed fell on fertile soil and produced a crop that was 30, 60, and even 100 times as much as had been planted. Anyone who is willing to hear should listen and understand. His disciples came and asked him, "Why do you always tell stories when you talk to the people?"
It's a really familiar story for us, isn't it? But I want us to dive under this story together today. I wonder, when you hear the word storyteller, if there's somebody that you think of, if there's somebody that you imagine. Because we love stories, don't we? We remember them, we treasure them, we share them. Stories shape our world, stories frame our existence. So much of who I understand myself to be is understood through the story that I tell myself and tell others about myself. Who's been a storyteller in your life? Maybe some of us had parents who'd read stories to us at bedtime, and I'm sure many of those are deeply imprinted on our mind. Maybe for others of us, there was somebody, a teacher, a leader, a youth worker, a preacher who told a story, and those words opened up a new world for us, and our lives felt different after that. For a lot of us, we think of storytellers these days as film directors. We share stories in a much more advanced way these days, but it's still the story that matters. And sometimes the greatest budgets in the world and the greatest actors and the greatest CGI in the world can't save a film if it's not got a good story. And sometimes a powerful film transcends the need for all of those things. One of my favourite directors in the world, in fact, probably of all time, is this guy, Chris Nolan. He's responsible for a whole bunch of incredible movies. He resurrected the not just Batman, but the whole superhero kind of film genre. Inception has got to be up there, hasn't it? On the top 10 list of all-time best films. Interstellar, absolutely incredible. And my personal favourite, a film called The Prestige. Now, I'll try not to geek too much, especially as there's nobody here to look at their watch. I'll try not to geek too much out about these films. Perhaps me and Tim will record a podcast about it at some point. But he's a master storyteller. And he draws you in to some fairly massive, some fairly complex themes through the lens often of one person or one family. And he's brilliant with symbolism. If you've watched his films, you may have picked up on some of this. That there's a book or a spinning top or a top hat or a stone. And in the context of the story, it's not just a book or a spinning top or a top hat or a stone. It's come to represent more than could be said with dialogue, or more than can be shown. I don't know if you've had that interesting experience of recommending a film or a book or a TV show to somebody, and they watch it and they just don't get it. Yeah, it was okay. And they haven't seen what you've seen in the story. To them, the book just was a book. The hat just was a hat. The stone just was a stone. But for you, it's meant more. And somehow, the stories that we share and the stories that matter carry within them, snug, almost sort of smuggle within them, a greater truth that words alone can't carry. And the master storyteller for this is, of course, Jesus. It's one of his primary ways, Matthew tells us, of teaching. And whenever he does it, these immense crowds gather. There's something powerful, there's something pregnant and potent about Jesus' stories. And we're going to start this morning with this one. Listen, Jesus says, a farmer went out to plant some seeds. As he scattered them across his field, some seeds fell upon a footpath. What's interesting for us today is, for many of us, and I speak for myself here, I've known a lot of these stories since childhood. I am a son of the manse. I went to church like 9 months before I was born. And so in so many different ways, I've heard and seen and acted in and shared in the stories of Jesus. And we can lose their power sometimes. Because Jesus wasn't just telling everyday, ordinary stories. He told stories about the stuff that matters. And these stories were shocking, surprising, compelling, challenging. And sometimes we have to look for the twist, we have to look for the surprising and the shocking. So what's shocking about this story? Yeah, and there is something shocking straight away. It's not like, you know, Jesus telling this story and saying an accountant went to his desk to balance some books and some of his clients had gone down, some of his clients' interest had gone up and some had done very, very well. There's something more going on here, and immediately the something more comes in the second sentence. A farmer went out to plant some seed, a really everyday, normal image, not a normal experience. But then, as he scattered them across his field, some seeds fell on a footpath. Straight away, this farmer, this sower, is not doing something everyday, not doing something average, not doing something normal. He's grabbing a handful of seeds and he's scattering them, he's throwing them. So much so that some of the seed lands in strange places, and we'll look at that in just a second, but Jesus immediately mentions one place, the footpath. I mean, nothing is going to grow on that ground at all. It's been trampled on by feet. It's usually the kind of the path around the area that was being sown, and it had been trampled down. It was crushed down. It was hard. And seed that lands on that bit of ground is just going to stay on the surface. We know that. They knew that. So why is this farmer scattering his seed? It's more common for people to work out where the best ground is to plant, and even then to work it, to get out the rocks and the weeds and to fertilise that land, to make it as fertile as possible, and then to draw in the land a line and to place the seeds carefully in the places that are best suited for growth. But not our farmer, not our sower. He's scattering. See, he's just throwing it everywhere. This is a picture of desperation. It's also a picture of hope. This farmer, it is scattering seed to let it grow wherever it can, wherever it will. This is a picture of desperate hope. It's interesting if you think about where Jesus was when he tells this story, and Matthew covers it very, very quickly, that he's down by the shore and there's a huge crowd that gathered around him. So Jesus does what he has to do on a number of occasions and borrow a boat. So he gets down into somebody's boat and is pushed out a little way from the shore just so he can see the whole crowd and that the crowd can hear him. And so Jesus is sat in a boat telling this story, looking at all these people who are stood on the land. And he's telling a story about one person's relationship with that land. That's no coincidence. In the culture of Jesus' day, a Jewish culture, predominantly Jewish audience that he's speaking to at this point, they understood that their relationship with the land was crucially and vitally important, not just in a practical sense, but in a spiritual sense. This was their land, not just by birth, but by promise. The Jews believed that this land had been gifted to them, chosen for them, and that they'd been chosen for the land, that they were there, they had responsibility over God's land. In some ways, it's not just that this was their land, it's almost like the land owned them. They were there to care for and tend the land that God had given them. And yet it was given them on a promise, and that promise is bound up in covenant. That covenant that kind of goes like this, that when you're faithful to me, God says, when you don't worship other gods, when you put me first, when you live my way, there is blessing, there's protection, there's provision. It's like God, as he gives them the commandments and the ways of God, is drawing for them this little map and says that when you dwell within these things, there's safety, there's provision, there's my presence, there's my blessing. If you stray outside of those lines, if you trespass, if you leave that place of blessing, then you don't have access to the promises of the covenant. And we see this right the way through the Old Testament. Isaiah 17 is a primary example of this. For you have forgotten the God of your salvation and have not remembered the rock of your refuge. Therefore you plant delightful plants and set them with vine slips of a strange god. And the people are worshipping idols and foreign gods and not trusting God to provide for them, and so are worshipping other gods of other nations. And so God says this, in the day that you plant it carefully, fence it in, and in the morning you bring your seed to blossom, but the harvest will be a heap in a day of sickliness and incurable pain. That's their understanding, that their relationship with the land somehow mirrors the promise, mirrors the covenant, mirrors their relationship with the God of the land, with the God of the people. And so when Jesus is sat in the boat looking at the people on the land this day, what's the state of their relationship with the land? Well, this is early on in Jesus' ministry, so we're looking at around about AD 30. We know that the land has been occupied by Roman forces for coming up 60 years, and before that it was owned and occupied by Greek forces as well, by the Greek Empire. Their relationship with the land represents their relationship with God. It's broken. For many people, wealthy landowners have seized the most fertile soil, the most fertile valleys and land. And so they're pushed out right on the edges of the land. For many of them, they recognize this picture of desperate hope. They don't have the luxury of having time to work the ground and carefully, strategically plant seeds in rows. They're in a situation of desperate hope, scattering on scraps of the land, on the edges of the land. So when Jesus tells this story, they'll recognize it, they'll know it. Here's somehow, finally, a rabbi who speaks for them. Here's a storyteller who names the problem, not just the practical everyday issue, but the deeper hunger. If anyone has ever longed for us as a nation to be right with God, this story and the stories of Jesus are for them. And all those in the crowd that day listening who are hungry to see the kingdom come as soon as a story is told about a land that is hard to work, they know what it means, and they're listening, they're leaning in with passion and interest. A farmer goes out to scatter some seed. And then Jesus starts to unpack what happens to that seed. Some of it, as we've said, falls on the surface. It doesn't penetrate the ground. It just sits there. And so it's vulnerable. The birds of the air swoop in and snatch it away, and it's gone. Others of it lands in places where it does grow. This is the first seed doesn't grow at all, but the next three do. This one shoots up, rockets up, but because the ground is shallow, it hasn't taken any root, and so as the sun comes up in the heat of the day, these plants, these vines, it withers, it dies away because it doesn't have the strength to sustain the early growth. Some others of it fall in among thorns and weeds and brambles. Now this could be in Jesus' day either above the surface or sometimes below the surface. There are all kinds of thorns and weeds. As with the shallow soil, with all the rocks that couldn't be seen, it wasn't obvious. And so these two do grow, they spring up. But then other stuff springs up around it, the distractions of life, and strangle the life, starve the life out of this growth. And so that too withers and dies. So far, Jesus is painting a picture of a harvest that is a heap, a mess. It's been snatched away, or it's been too shallow, or it's been strangled out. But then he says, some seed falls on good soil, on fertile ground, and it produces a harvest. And he uses this expression 30, 60, and even 100 times that which was sown. This is supernatural growth. This is, you know, let me just be clear, this is not normal. This didn't happen in Jesus's days. He's not suggesting that it's because of the scattering. He's saying that there's something supernatural happening here, and the people would have known that as they were listening in to unpick this strange behavior, listening in to hear what he's going to say about their nation. And so Jesus is in a boat looking at the people on the land, telling a story about their land, and he says that something is being scattered now, something is being sown, something with the power to grow and to change. But in some places, it'll just land on the surface and get snatched away. For other people, it will start to grow, but there won't be a sense of strength. There won't be a sense of rootedness, of connectedness. And so it'll die away. For other people, again, it will grow, but it'll get strangled out by other stuff, by the cares and concerns of life and wealth. But for some, as that seed is scattered in hope, in this lavish picture, take it, have it, eat it, grow it, there will be growth, supernatural growth. And after Jesus has told this potent, powerful story, he then says this: whoever has ears to hear, let them hear. One of the most, for me, powerful definitions of a parable is simply this: that when Jesus told these stories, as he smuggled truth into people's hearts and minds, it sort of lived there like a ticking time bomb waiting to go off. Seed sown, potential to grow, surface, shallow, strangled, or supernatural. Whoever has ears to hear, let them hear. So what Jesus says is that there are some people who have ears, but not ears to hear. For some people, they're not listening. It's all surface level. It bounces back off. They're not interested. For them, the seed is just the seed, and the sower is just the sower, and the stories are just stories. Some people have ears to hear, but for them there are things that are stopping them from hearing. Those who have ears to hear, let them hear. So for some, there will be listening, and there will be growth, but there'll be a lack of depth, a lack of understanding. And then for others, there will be those who have ears to hear and will hear. I wonder if Jesus, who uses this phrase a number of times through the Gospels and elsewhere in Scriptures, we'll see in just a moment, I wonder if he's declaring this not just to the people, but also spiritually, if this is a kingdom declaration. Later on, the disciples ask him to explain this parable to them, and he unpicks it for them. And he explains that the birds that swoop in the story and who snatch away the seed, he says that's like the evil one. That's like the devil, who will very, very quickly, this is why whenever there is mission, it must be bathed in prayer, because it is a spiritual thing, it's a spiritual battle. I wonder if Jesus is declaring this spiritually, as he opens his mouth, as he bursts the dam, the mysteries hidden from the foundation of the world, the truths of the kingdom, as they're spewing out, as they're bursting out, if he's declaring this spiritually, those who have ears to hear, let them hear. Let them hear. And so this ticking time bomb lives in people's minds, and they have to ask the question, what have I done with that seed, with that story, with that storyteller? What have I done with Jesus? Have I got ears to hear what he was really saying? Am I really listening? Am I shallow? Am I strangled out? Am I surface? Or am I listening and pressing in and seeing supernatural growth? At our AGM only a couple of weeks ago, I think it was the week before last, time seems very odd at the moment, we were looking at a passage from Revelation when Jesus is dictating a letter through the disciple John to one church. And there are seven of these in Revelations. I'd love to look at them in depth with us at some point. And Jesus has many different things to say to each of the different churches, but there's something that he says at the end of every letter that kind of mirrors what he says here. He says to them this: those who have ears to hear, let them hear what the Spirit is saying to the churches. What the Spirit is saying to the churches. It's possible that the Spirit is speaking to the church, but that we are the ones who don't have ears to hear what he's saying. That we're not, other stuff might be drowning it out, or that there just isn't space to let him speak in our personal lives and in our gathering and in our leadership. Is there space for Jesus to speak by his Spirit into the harvest and into the work of the workers of the harvest field? Or am I now, even as somebody who's hoping to grow spiritually, am I a kind of a surface level Christian? Just let it land, just take it, but I don't do the hard work of cultivating it, of letting it go deeper, not just into what I hear, but what I understand, and then into how I live and how I behave. Am I one of those Christians who sprung up really, really quickly, but there isn't that sense of rootedness? I've never spent time to work it out for myself. I've never really connected in, bedded in to the church, into a small group of people who will love me and support me, and where I can love and support them. I never do the deep work, the hard work of asking, Lord Jesus, where does this really land for me in my life? Or am I the kind of Christian who I do listen to Jesus? I come to church, I listen to podcasts, I read my Bible, I talk about it, but then it gets drowned out. It gets forgotten with everything else that's going on. There are other cares, there are other concerns that grow up around it. And the Lord describes them as weeds, as thorns that choke the life out of our faith? What's choking the life out of your faith right now? What's choking the life out of your passion to grow in Jesus, to be rooted and established in Jesus? Or when we do have ears to hear what the Spirit is saying, then there is a supernatural growth. There are times, aren't there, when God speaks, when God leads, when a vision comes, when something happens, and the only thing you can say is, God did that. Supernatural growth. A seed that fell on good soil 30, 60, 100 times. You couldn't put it down to the brilliance of the harvest workers. It was simply the quality of the seed landing in the right place. See, in all of these examples, in all of these moments in Jesus' story, the one thing that stays the same is the seed. Jesus tells us later on, doesn't he, that the seed is the word of God. We don't need another seed. We don't need to change it. We don't need to filter it. We don't need to chemically enhance it. Yeah, there will be people for whom it's not understood. There will be people who don't want to go deep into it. There will be people for whom it's snatched away or strangled out or just shallow, but we're to be those who lavishly scatter it, who spread it, who share it in desperate hope of what God can do. It's interesting, the disciples ask Jesus a question, and maybe this is a question that you and I have had at times. The disciples came to him and asked, why do you speak to people in parables? Why do you use these stories? And another translation of the word parable sometimes is the word riddle. Why is it hard to get? Why is it hard to grasp? Maybe we've had that kind of question about Jesus. Jesus, why do you say and do things in the scriptures and then in our lives and in the church, which is hard to grasp? I asked earlier if anyone here was hungry to see this nation return to God, get right with God. I am. I pray for revival every day, that God would revive the work of the church and revive this nation. That God would draw people in to the kingdom in a way that can only be God, that can only be classified and clarified as God's work among us. I wish he would do that. I pray for that. But he seems to work often in other ways, and do things which are small. Why is that? I wonder if as Jesus looked at the crowd, he could see the different soils. Jesus, as he looks at us, you know, he sees the depths of our hearts, doesn't he? He doesn't need anyone to tell him about us. He sees us. He sees those people for whom this is going to bounce off, and he sees those people for whom it's going to spring up very, very quickly, but there won't be the understanding. It happens, doesn't it, at times in the Gospels. There are times when Jesus, for example, feeds the 5,000 and they want to go and make him king by force. And they haven't understood the way of Jesus, the way of the kingdom, that yes, he's king, but he's a very different kind of king. And the way in which he will rule is a very different kind of rule than anything we've known. There are times when Jesus does reveal who he is, when demons announce this is the Son of God, that the people can't handle it, it's too much too soon, and they ask him to leave. There's one time when he heals, what's the guy's name? Legion. And this is a very public person who is known locally as having this spiritual oppression, this spiritual possession in his life. Jesus heals him and frees him, and it's too much that the people ask him to go. See, for some people, they're just not ready for the deeper truths of who Jesus is. And so these parables at one and the same time reveal something, but also conceal something. There's enough there for those who have ears to hear, to see it, And for others, it's like a seed that has the opportunity to grow, to germinate, to be cultivated, to be nurtured. That ticking time bomb is there. Let those who have ears to hear what the Spirit is saying to the churches. So how about you? And how about me? I don't want to presume to know where you are today. I'm not even there, so I'm not even looking at you. And some of us are watching from home, and hi to you. Some of us will be watching this at a later date, later this week or later in the future, and I don't want to presume to know where you are with God. But you know. You will have had a sense already from just the power of this story this morning about how you're growing, about what's happening with the truth of Jesus in your life. Is it taking root? Is it bringing change? Is it producing life? Or does it get snatched away all too easily? Does it get swallowed up by other stuff? Is it always shallow? Is it strangled? Or is there something that God is doing which is releasing his life, his kingdom, his way in you, which is above and beyond anything that you can do? Where are you? And key to that today, it's not the whole thing, but really key to it, is this whole thing about having ears to hear and allowing space for the Spirit to speak. I'm really encouraged by the stories of the disciples. You know, I've been reading them again and again as we've been preparing and going through the discipleship group material, Bless, with two groups of people as a church at the moment. And it encourages me to see how often they see something of Jesus revealed or demonstrated, and then how quickly they forget, how quickly they fall away, because often that's my journey. And I need to be reminded and restored. There's one time after Jesus, they've seen Jesus feed two crowds with food that was not enough for them. At first it was a crowd of around 5,000 people, and on the second occasion it was a crowd of around 4,000 people. And after this they get into a boat and they're sailing away, and somebody panics that they don't have any bread with them. Somebody's hungry and thinking about food, and that's encouraging because that's often where I am. And Jesus looks at them and says, "Why are you still talking about having no bread? Do you not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see, and ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember?" Sometimes when we come to Jesus, we come to Jesus for answers, but very often he has questions for us. Why are you still talking about not having any bread? Don't you see? And don't you understand? One of the key words that John, when he writes his gospel, chooses to describe the ministry of Jesus, the miracles of Jesus, is the word sign. That they were a sign to something greater. They were a signpost to glory. Do you see me? Jesus says. Do you get me? Are your hearts hardened? It's interesting that he uses that word there, a hardness of heart. In the story that Jesus tells, the hardness comes from a path that's been trampled on. And maybe for some of us here today, I'm just thinking about this now, it's just coming to me now, so this could well be for somebody. Our hearts have grown hardened because we've trampled down this road a long time. We've known Jesus, we've known God, we've walked with his Spirit a long time, and we've got used to it. It's not a wonder anymore. His grace bounces off, his love bounces off. We sing songs about his greatness or his cross, and it doesn't, you know what I'm talking about. Are your hearts hardened? Jesus didn't say that to people who hadn't seen a miracle. He said it to people who'd just seen him multiply bread twice and then argue about bread. Are your hearts hardened? Our hearts can be hardened by overuse. Passages we've read the same way over and over, prayers that we've prayed that have never been answered by staying where we are in our faith and not trying to press in, not trying to step out. We get hard and we argue about bread when we worship a crowd feeder. Do you have eyes but fail to see? Do you have ears but fail to hear? I really feel like this morning there's a word here for us. As we begin this new season together, do we have ears but fail to hear? Is there something that the Lord has been trying to say to you? Is there something that the Lord has been trying to say to me? Whoever has ears to hear, let them hear what the Spirit is saying to the churches.